if you're early on in your creative development, it can definitely feel like a slap in the face that whenever someone likes the thing that you made, that they always feel like there's not enough of it. But I think that's
that's good. Like the highest form of praise from a human, right? It's like,
I want more.
This isn't enough.
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 260 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I still haven't showered today.
I'm Sam, and I'm the R2.
I know.
How are you standing?
I was about to go get in the shower when I got a text message being like, podcast? And I was like, oh, right. I completely forgot about the podcast. And so here I am.
You just gotta kick us off with some dirty talk, you know? That's what's happening.
He just did.
What are you talking? Yeah. Boom.
Disgusting.
Explicit podcast warning.
Yeah. Also, this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is May 24th, 2020. And as you've just heard, anything could happen on this show, and it's going to be disgusting.
Yep.
So, explicit warning.
If you're still here with us after that disgusting intro story, then
hideous.
Yeah.
Then you
belong here with us.
And before we get into the appetizers of the podcast, we've got a little pre-meal thanks
for our amuse-bouche.
What's a bon mot?
What are you people saying?
Amuse-bouche, Seth. It's a way to amuse your mouth, you know?
Amuse-bouche.
So that literally means amuse your mouth?
One can only assume, given that.
I'm pretty sure. I don't know.
Sounds like it. Well, we'd like to thank our recurring supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. We grabbed your money. Thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Let's talk about life. Let's talk about Adam Got Aphids.
Mm-hmm. It's a new children's book.
Yeah, Adam.
We got this really spectacular specimen of a plant in our yard. It's an elderberry bush. So we got one of these because we were like, this sounds fun. You can make a liqueur
berries.
With it.
Our berries are too young.
Yeah, we need some older berries, you know, so it seemed like a fun thing to do. And this thing grew like fucking crazy. It's like, I don't know if it's related to bamboo or what the deal is, but it grows so fast and it's just outrageous. So we got a couple of these things last year. They grew huge. They felt great. They're creating this like nice screen in the front of our yard so randos can't spy on us. Everything is great. So then this year, I've been doing limited yard work because we just don't go outside anymore. And then even though our yard is not a COVID, you know, area, I'm so used to not going outside that I'm like, I don't go in the yard either.
It's also because people aren't coming over.
Nobody's coming over, so it's all just weird. So I haven't been really paying a lot of attention, except just to kind of go like weed whack the lawn, you know, because it's small, so I can weed whack instead of mow it. Pull some weeds here and there, you know, but that's basically it. And so I went out and I was taking a tour of the yard, just kind of see how things were going. And I got to this elderberry bush, which this year is just so huge. It's just enormous and glorious. And I came over to kind of like just peer admiringly at it, you know, and I'm like, I'm flipping this leaf over and there's almost like black shit on it. I'm like, the fuck is this black shit? And I look closer and it's a bunch of little tiny bugs, like tiny.
Whoa.
And then I kind of take a step back and I look a little more broadly in this plant, which is, again, it's like, it's easily 12 feet tall. It's like 20 stalks, each stalk of which is like what you think of as a bamboo stalk. It's like an inch wide, right? And it's just like draped, it's just this huge monstrosity of a plant. And it is just coated with these like just pockets of these black aphids.
Yeah.
So I saw that and I was pissed and I was like, I don't know, what do they even do? I know they're on there and they're not supposed to.
What are they even doing here?
What are they gonna do?
Get out of here.
Doing some Googling, and apparently the thing that they love to do is to like destroy flowers. They get on the little buds or something and they just suck all the juices out of there and nuke it. And of course the whole reason we have this thing, it's for the flowers. That's why we have this, you know? So I'm looking around at what to do. And the strategy I really want to do is to buy a whole bunch of assassin bugs, because this is a thing you can just do. You can just buy assassin bugs and like, just release them.
Is there a black market for these? Or is this
there's like a regular market. You can just buy them. And you can buy – so for aphids in particular, you can also buy these parasitic like creatures and stuff, like parasitic mites and stuff that just love to fuck with aphids. Whoa. And you can buy – and there's like these lacewing – which actually things I remember seeing growing up, I didn't know what they were, but these like they can look kind of like dragonflies. These are like lacewing insects, but their larvae just fucking, they can eat like 60 aphids a day, right? And so I was looking around.
Is that a lot? I don't know.
It's not a lot compared to how many aphids I have, but it is a lot. Yeah. There's like some other creature that like during every stage of its life cycle, like from larva to adult, it's just like fucking munching on aphids. And there's another one that murders aphids even when it's not hungry, which is
just hates them so much.
It just kills them. It just kills them and then eats them whenever it decides it's actually hungry.
Whoa. So wait a minute. So what you're saying is you're going to Pokemon these aphids.
This is what I want to do. This is what I absolutely want to do. However, so I was doing all this, I was reading up on all these different websites where you can buy these things, right? And and reading up on the instructions. And the instructions are super fun because like some of them they come and you can just like throw them in the fridge for a couple weeks until like you're ready to use them. Like you can do this with ladybugs apparently. So ladybugs are your go-to and what everybody thinks of for aphids, except they just fly away. So you can dump like a million of them in your yard and they're just like, fuck this, I'm
they just
out.
Leave.
And they just leave. And so there are a whole bunch of these like better alternatives. But the funny thing is that everywhere I was looking to buy them, they only come in these enormous numbers, like just
for farming.
Outrageous, because it's all for farming and for greenhouses and stuff, right? So for organic greenhouses and farms. And I was just trying to decide. I was like, should I? Because I could get assassin bugs, but I have to get 250 at a time. You're only supposed to put like two on a plant. And because this plant is huge, I could probably put like 50 on there, you know, maybe. But I got these other 200. Like, what am I supposed to do?
When you say
come these huge volumes.
When you say put them on there, I'm imagining you just like hand plucking an assassin.
Oh, man. No, they come in all these different varieties. So some of them, depending on the kind of bug you're getting, some of them come as like pupa, right? And then you got to let them hatch. It's like the lace wings, they come as little pupae. And then you wait until you can see them moving. And then you go put them out. Like, you just like have a little card and you just like shove the card in the plants that you want or something. And then they'll go you know, migrate throughout your yard basically. Mm. But if you wait too long, because they start hatching, like in a container, then they just start eating each other because they just love to eat other bugs, you know.
Whoa!
But then if you get ladybugs, you get ladybugs as adults. But then your goal there is to like have them stick around just long enough that they mate, because their babies are the ones who eat all the. So there's like all these different strategies, and they were talking about how to have like a complex scenario where you have these like four different kinds of bugs that all eat aphids plus a whole bunch of other things that you don't want. And like when you put them out and then like how you treat the plants when they get out. So I was getting really excited.
Man, you're walking right into an old woman who swallowed a fly.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Because the one I want the most is mantises, because you can just buy mantises too.
Mm.
Like 100 at a time, which is fucking awesome. But the problem with a mantis is that they just eat everything. So they'll be eating all your good bugs too. You know? So you have to get these – they're these tiny parasitic wasps, just like little tiny guys, and they just like go kill all the pests that you don't want, and you don't even see them because they're like a fifth of an inch long or something. So I learned a whole bunch of really cool stuff, and I wanted to go just buy a fuckload of interesting murder bugs and put them out in the yard.
just set them loose.
But they all, like, everything, as I was reading the instructions for all these, that they were so complicated, like what to do, and I was sometimes excited, but also I was looking at one of the other options for controlling aphids. Because also I don't want to poison the yard, because we like having a nice ecosystem with lots of bugs. Yeah. And I don't want to put anything out there that'll kill other bugs, you know? So, but the other solution is to literally just take a squirt bottle and put a drop of dish soap in there and then just spray the aphids. Because aphids are soft bodied. And so it melts their skin a little, like just enough that they just kind of die.
Whoa.
And then another solution, which is you throw flour, like literally just flour on the plant. And then apparently they get constipated from eating it and then just die because they're constipated. And so
these are all terrible ways to die.
These are terrible ways to die. Melted, but they deserve it.
Or you can't poop to death.
But so now I'm left with this conundrum now, right? Because
how do you want to do your murder, Adam?
I could go order all these amazing murder bugs, right? Just amazing. 500 to 1,000 at a time. And just like have the yard just filled with murder bugs, right? Which is amazing.
A really important question is, do aphids scream while they're being murdered? Because you're going to have there's going to be a cacophony out there.
A lot of aphid scream. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hope so.
That little tiny, like tinny scream, you know? Yeah.
There are enough of them that if they make any sound at all, I will be able to hear it.
That's true.
So yeah, so what do I do? Do I take the easy route where I can just literally right now just go outside with a squirt bottle with a little bit of soap in it and just spray them all and be done? Or
do you do the
coolest
thing?
Do I order several hundred dollars of murder bugs that are all amazing, way more than I need, and throw them all out in the yard and hope that there aren't any negative repercussions, and that hope that this actually works 2 to 8 weeks after I do this?
I think you need to weigh this against your 5-year plan, you know, because like if you squirt them with soap and then leave, like you're done now. right?
Yeah.
You've done it. It's done. You just squirted it. You're good. As soon as you go down this murder bug route, you know, fast forward 5 years from now, your neighbors are going to be calling the police because you've got crocodiles and shit mm-hmm. in your yard. Mm-hmm. And the cops are going to come and they're going to be like, what? Why?
And I'll just be like, have you ever seen this book?
You'll be like, you know aphids. So it's a long story.
Yeah, controlling your ecosystem is a
fragile path to thing. Go
down. Yeah, because you're just a person. You can't know.
I was very disappointed though because in seeing all of this, I got really excited and I was like, are there murder bugs for mosquitoes? Because if there are, I'm going to order them. I'm going to buy them. Nope. No, somehow, there are bugs that murder everything. Right?
No, you need
every
bats.
Kind of bug, there's a bug that murders it. But you have to have whole mammals. Yep. To eat mosquitoes. An entire mammal. You can't just go buy a mammal.
Spiders don't. You know? Spiders get mosquitoes, right?
They do, but not in bulk.
Not like, not in a targeted way.
Yeah.
And plus, now you got webs everywhere.
That's true. There's some collateral there.
Which I'm mostly okay because I like spiders, but they can only catch like a few hundred, a night or whatever. But a single bat can eat like 6,000 fucking mosquitoes in a night.
And in fact, has to because
it has to stay alive.
So huge. Yeah.
So you could build one of those bat houses in your.
Are there any
yard.
Bats left?
Yeah, there's like 12.
Yeah.
Did you see some bats? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, maybe I'll do that.
They're coming out.
Build a bat house. Build a bat house for your mosquitoes and then unleash a wave of murder bugs for your aphids.
But I mean, how much?
So you just kind of see where that goes.
But just it seems like so much more fun than regular gardening, Where you're just like, I got to go pull a weed or, whatever. But you're just like, what kind of murder bugs can I.
Well, now you've basically got a Helm's Deep sort of Lord of the Rings situation going on. Yeah,
exactly.
In your yard.
Yeah. So, Gondor calls for aid. The mantis.
So
that's just sort of an FYI. This is letting everybody know. If you've got any aphids, just know you can buy at least 6 different kinds of murder bugs to control those things.
Just know you got options.
You got options. Depending on the level of fun you want to have and money you want to spend. Because it is a lot cheaper to put one drop of soap in a spray bottle.
As far as immediacy and efficacy, that sounds like the way to go.
Yeah, that's apparently the way to go, but I'm just not.
And also you'll have real clean leaves afterwards, too.
Yeah.
That's another plus. Yep. Well, this has been Adam Got Aphids. So
A new sub-podcast.
A new podcast within a podcast. Mm-hmm. Adam Got Aphids. Let's see how his murder ecosystem is going. All right. And Adam and Sam, you guys both were playing a bunch of Terraria this weekend.
Yeah.
Terraria, as we discussed last week, had a big update. They added something like 1.3 trillion new items to the game.
That's about right.
Mm-hmm.
They did sort of a general overhaul. So, and I think the thing that I noticed immediately was that suddenly everything felt more alive because there was a lot more animation. So there's wind and wind makes things blow. All the banners that used to get stuff, now the banners all like flip. So if it's a windy day and weather's a lot more intense and interesting. So there's like violent thunderstorms and stuff.
Basically, I would say the overall moodiness of the game has gone way up, which is great.
Yeah. Also a lot more music, a lot more music.
Yeah.
But I always liked the music in Terraria though.
It's very chill, just like for. Yeah, they did a good job of setting the mood with that music, but they took it up a notch and they kind of they redid everything and also added a bunch of new stuff. So
I will say that the whole everything is animated thing is funny because it's actually not animated. They're just using a shader to sort of like push things around pixel by pixel.
Well, I mean, you say it's actually not animated, but I mean.
Well, that's the thing, right? What a great cheap solution.
It's always better to have a machine do it than to do
that. Yeah. This is true in RimWorld as well. The trees are completely static images and then they use a shader to just kind of make them slightly move back and forth all the time. So
it does a ton of work, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Now, Sam, you wanted to talk about inventory.
Yeah. That was my big takeaway from getting back in there. In the case of the original Crashlands, one of our things was, inventory management sucks. We're tired
which
of it.
Which is true.
Deal with it. Which is true. But I think it's important to drill down further into what exactly actually is the suck part of inventory management. And after playing Terraria this weekend, I realized it's actually not, for me, the case of having an inventory fill up and then having to return.
Which does suck, but it also provides a benefit.
And this is the big thing, which is that what I hate is the sorting.
Yes.
Spending 15 minutes afterwards being like, where do all these go and all the mental energy required for that? When, in reality, there could be a system that you could just like dunk stuff into.
Yeah, because like in Terraria, because also Terraria has so many items, so many kinds of things. That I know right now, so Jay and I have been playing We also started when the update came out, so we probably put in a total of like 10 hours maybe into the current run or something like that. And we already have like 12 chests, you know, all the different kinds of stuff that have to be managed. And like we should know where everything goes and like try to remember where stuff is and what we have. And
And so you're talking about like searching is more computationally humane than sorting, right? Mm-hmm. And sort of like putting everything in the right place. And so I think the issue I have is actually not with that inventory filling up. It's with that the secondary part. And what I noticed, though, is that having a limited inventory in terms of like on your person as you're running around the world does an extremely important job in the case of a game like Terraria or a game where there's like exploration is sort of the big point, which is that it actually keeps you in a sort of a hot state where you like you're in the middle of something and then you're like, oh, shit, like I need to go back to like empty my bags, essentially. Right.
Mm-hmm. Or you have to get prepared to do something because you don't have inventory, but want to go fight a boss. Or
exactly.
Something.
And so. But while you're out and about, then you'll be like you're sort of in the middle of stuff and you could view this interruption as a problem. But here's what I think is that the return to base while you're still in that hot state means that you're getting your stuff put away. But also you're actually going through your items at that point that you collected. And so what ends up happening almost invariably is that in the attempt to complete one plan, which was, you originally were going out to, for example, go adventuring or go mining or whatever, because of this interruption that comes, it's usually pretty long actually, but like 10, 15, 20 minutes in where you have to go back and you're still in this, like I'm on that thing, but you sort, you end up actually making more plans and opening more sort of like open-ended loops for you to go take care of later by virtue of coming back in that hot state. And so then you
also
say,
you're collecting, like in Terraria, you're collecting stuff unintentionally at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you come back to base to unload everything, you're like, ooh, I can make this now, right?
Exactly. And so
make some new gear, make some new potions, and then dive back down.
Yeah. And so you end up actually, by virtue of trying to complete one plan, spawning anywhere from like 2 to 10, sometimes more other plans. And so what ends up happening actually is within like 3 or 4 of these sort of full inventory moments, you suddenly you can end up having just a tremendous number of things to do, quote unquote, that you're like these future plans you've made, whatever else. And then so what ends up happening at some point, this happened to me for about 4 hours in, is that suddenly actually about every like 10 or 15 minutes of you playing the game becomes extremely rewarding because these things that you've been thinking about, like this laundry list of things you've been thinking about for now a couple of hours, you just start checking them off because every time you go out now, you're actually solving both not just usually one, but like 2 or sometimes 3 of these like quiet plans that were being made in the background. And sometimes they're simple where it's like, oh, I wanted to find another picture to put in the house or I need to finish out this room, whatever else. And sometimes they're really complex, which is like, oh, I finally got the drop for this thing that allows me to build these 2 items, whatever. And so what ends up happening is actually the game feels like way more rich over time by virtue of all those plans that get spun up. And I think they get spun up primarily because you have to stop what your current plan. You can't fully execute a plan. That's essentially what it comes down to.
I think it's interesting if you look at – so this idea of sorting being the part that just globally sucks, right, versus a limit, which creates interesting constraints and actually causes some knock-on positive effects in gameplay. If you look at in Terraria, the stuff that they've improved over time in terms of your inventory – the stuff that's about sorting has gone into the UI out of the gate by default, right? So they added these like buttons to your interface to make it so like when you're running by chests, you don't have to open them. You just hit a little button, and then if it could be stacked on existing things in that chest, it just goes in there, right?
Yep.
So you can basically like come back home, just stand amongst the middle of your jillions of chests,
just do a drive,
hit that button, and like everything goes wherever it's supposed to go, right? And so that's just out of the gate. You just have that. But now if you look at things that expand your inventory, there's basically like there's a safe, there's a piggy bank, but you don't normally take those with you. You could take those with you like on a run, right? So you actually have access to more inventory inside your inventory. So you could, but they're very expensive, right? So like the amount of gameplay you have already completed to expand your inventory is huge. And then so they have that, but then they have like a void
that's
vault.
Actually, I just made that yesterday. Yeah.
So I made one of those. I'm very excited about it.
It's awesome.
So it literally makes a void in the world, right? That you like reach into, like sort of in effect, right?
So it works like a normal chest where it essentially doubles your inventory capacity because you can actually, the vault lives at your house as like a chest, and then you have a bag in your inventory that you can use to open the vault from wherever you are. Mm-hmm. So it just like throws out a void, and then you click on the void, and it's just like – it's that chest actually.
So it's basically in Crashlands we talked about how the reason Flux can store infinite things is because in the pockets of the Infinisuit are wormholes that go back to a Bureau shipping warehouse.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So it's just that, but actually as an in-game
yeah.
thing. Like you build the warehouse as well.
Exactly. Right? And so right. yeah, it ends up being this really fascinating thing.
But it's all late game stuff, right? So like so in terms of this yeah. idea of like the stuff that has to do with sorting, they just built into the UI.
Because it's just really good to have all
it's
the time.
It's really good to have all the time because that's a sucky part of the game. The part has to do with inventory expansion is actually embedded in the gameplay progression because that actually is a true core component of the game versus sorting and like dealing with your chest, which is not really a component of the game.
Yeah. And what that inventory expansion then allows you to do is that, of course, the crafting and stuff gets more complex elaborate. And more resource intensive yeah. as you go along. So actually you have to go on longer adventures, right? And so you can see this the scenario playing out, which is that you're going on longer and longer adventures, but your inventory hasn't scaled up at all, which means that you're actually – you start running out of plants at that point, right? Like you're
– Well, also you're choosing what to ignore. Like everything that you see, you're kind of weighing your options, yeah. right? Because like if you're trying to go get advanced materials, then you're no longer in a position where you're like, I'm just going to dig up and collect a shitload of dirt
yep.
because you don't need it. For anything, mm-hmm. So you would end up just skipping it, right?
Yeah, and the skipping that is what actually creates the lack of those new plants, right? Because it's always just random shit. It's like you found a random gun, and you're like, "What does this do?" And then you look it up on the wiki, and you're like, "Oh man, I could make this other thing with that. I'm gonna keep that around for later, right?" And now you got this other plant, sort of like floating in the back of my
mind. But then here's an interesting question, then, because what you're talking about is basically like the purpose of a limited inventory, aside from just saving on. Data storage and stuff like optimization wise, but from a game design perspective is it does create the constant decision making for the player about what to keep, what not to keep, as well as it interrupts your plans because if your inventory gets full, then either you got to ditch something, mm-hmm. which sucks, or you got to go back to store all your stuff before you can continue your journey. So it's a fork in the road. For you as yeah. a player, of like you have to now make a decision. Contrasting that with what Crashlands ended up feeling like, a lot of the comments we got from Crashlands players was this idea that it's very zen like. You know, once you kind of like get into the swing of the game, you can go out on a gathering adventure and you're just out there for like an hour. And you're just like just chopping trees, just picking up everything that you see, and you can kind of like zone out and just kind of get lost in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason. Is big, of course, because at no point do you just get like hit by this confrontational
There's no
moment
limit.
Where
yeah.
yeah, where you just have to decide what to do.
Well, and we use a different trigger, right? Because we let you know what the recipes are, and then we let you track one. So that now instead of the trigger being, oh, my inventory is full, right? The trigger that's basically sending you home is always, oh, I can make the thing that I wanted to make. And like and yeah. now you go home to do that, right? But it changes the sense of home dramatically. Because like in Terraria my wife and I always set up pretty elaborate homes, you know, because it's like – it's the thing that you always – because you have to go back there all the time to do stuff, right, to manage your inventory in particular. And in Crashlands, like – because I would spend most of my time in Crashlands just out in the world doing stuff.
Yeah.
And then only come back to craft a specific item. Like that was the purpose. And then while I was back crafting an item, I would often also craft knock-on items that I wasn't expecting, right, in the same sense that in Terraria, you come back to unload inventory and then like discover a whole bunch of other stuff, right? But instead of it being like a, in effect, a random, because like, and you can think of this as basically like a random trigger, or even like, it's like a time gated trigger that, yeah. that Terraria has, right? Where exploration phases are actually just kind of limited in length so that there's just always a push to knock you back. And there's a loop there versus yeah. in Crashlands, that loop is basically the completion of a quest or completion of a
yes
of a it's completion of something and that thing can have a really arbitrary duration, and that's when we kick you back to your home, right? And so it's way less frequent. It changes the meaning of what it means to go home, right?
What's kind of interesting is that like they both have positive and negative implications for the player experience, and so it kind of depends on what you want the overarching feeling of the game to be. You know, it does make sense where like in a survival game, you're always starving, right? So there's always this like time pressure to like eat stuff and find food and whatnot, which is kind of it's a tense thing. So if you're just looking to go chill out, like starting a new save on a survival game is probably not the thing you want to be doing, right? Yeah. But playing a game like Crashlands is actually great for like a chill session, just because you can just – if something attacks you, you just leave. Mm-hmm. And you just pick up everything you see, and the quests are goofy, you know. And Terraria is somewhere in the middle.
Well, I think but there's another sort of weird secondary point there, which is actually that in a game like Crashlands, moving around does not generate items to fill up your inventory. Versus in a game like Terraria or Minecraft, where you dig to do stuff, basically.
Right.
You're just constantly filling your inventory.
Yeah. And so I think there might be an interesting middle ground here, which is to have your home base essentially be the infinite storage space, where once you get back there, you dump your items in. Cool.
It's a sortable thing that has a search bar, you know, it's mm-hmm. sortable. You can, move stuff by categories.
Everything you want. But then when you're out and about, we actually do have a limit on it to make it so that you actually sort of get a little bit of both, because the reality is, like in Crashlands, if you're just harvesting log trees, you wouldn't fill up your inventory.
Yeah.
You would.
Unless we limited the stack size, which they always tend to do. But I also – because I hate that. But also that was one of the other things that they removed in Terraria is like the stack sizes are
now way higher. Yeah,
it's way higher on everything than it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. So all of this is to say we're thinking a lot about Crashlands for reasons we'll talk about in a little while. But first let's talk a little bit about Levelhead before we get into Crashlands discussion or more Crashlands discussion. So first, Levelhead, Delivery League Championship – happened this past weekend.
It is super still cool. happening, actually.
It is a head-to-head race where two players come in, they play essentially a randomly generated list of levels, and they compete to complete all 10 levels as fast as possible. And it's fucking awesome. It's on Twitch. You can watch it. We have links in the Discord and stuff to get there, as well as in the community spotlight blog post. But there's commentators. It feels like an e-sport. Like it feels so legit.
Yeah, it's very well done. And I think they have another one in this coming weekend or 2 weekends, something like that. I think mm-hmm. that's part of the schedule. So you should definitely check it out.
Yeah. So definite props to all the folks who have been working hard to organize that stuff. It's really coming together, and it's hilarious. It's fun to watch. It's really a kind of a nail biter. So that's super cool. As well as we want to give a shout out to Retrofile for doing his blindfolded runs. Retrofile TV streams Levelhead on Twitch, and he in the past has done blindfolded level runs, and it's always just really interesting mm-hmm. and hilarious. So one of the things that Levelhead has that we didn't really sort of like think about as being something that would allow for a blind run is that you have your grappler and you can shoot it in a direction, right? And so at any point, you can aim it like up, down, left, or right and hit the grapple button. And if there's an instant like pinging sound, then you know that you're up against a hard surface. So basically somebody can use Geraldine's grappler kind of like a cane, right? To like mm-hmm. feel the environment and listen for what's around them. And so Retrofile TV has been doing these blindfolded runs.
I think a lot of what he does is he plays them without a blindfold to like try to memorize where things are and like what's going on in the level and all that kind of stuff. And then plays like a chunk at a time blindfolded to see if he can do it. And then finally like sits down and he's like, okay, like blindfolds up and then just goes. And it is remarkable.
He completes levels.
Yeah, hard ones.
Which is
he completes levels that would be hard for most people to complete without a blindfold on.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's pretty wild. So he's got a bunch of videos. I assume he's got a YouTube channel somewhere. But always posts them in the Discord and in the videos channel. So also a thing to check out. Maybe this week's Friday community spotlight will have some of these things in it. Because they are just really spectacular. Although there's a lot of profanity in them, so maybe we won't put them in the spot.
Honestly, yeah. Whenever I'm playing Levelhead, it's every few seconds I'm just like, "Fuck!" It's a hard game. So there's a lot of cool stuff happening in the community, and it just keeps happening. We love it. It's fun to watch. Very excited.
And this update's coming along really well.
Yeah. So we want to talk a little bit about the patch that we're working on. So this patch, as we mentioned last week, canoodles, those are happening. We got them in, figured out what we're doing with them.
I'm so
new
excited.
Enemy. It's the first enemy that shoots ranged projectiles at you. We added a little fun little extra thing, which should say it?
Let him figure it out. Let him figure it out.
All right. We've got a bunch of new enemies we're working on. And I think one of the things that I'm the most excited about is that we're kind of like blowing the lid off some of the player expression things for this patch. Really trying to put an eye toward like extra cosmetics and just extra ways for players to like customize levels and market their levels. So we got things like new icons for your levels, like a nice new bundle of those. But we've also got stuff like you can change the colors of things that you previously couldn't change the colors on.
Yeah, basically everything that's spiky.
Yeah.
That's what you get now.
Yeah. And already just playing around with it sort of in like its, not prototypey stage, but in like its early stages of development. It just kind of changes everything, you know, like just being able to convey stuff differently and have like yellow spikes or purple spikes. It just seems – it sounds mundane on the face, but when you see it, it's just so fucking great. So there's a lot of these things that I feel like I'm really excited about because it feels like it's kind of like tying a ribbon on stuff that we've always kind of wanted to do, and we just didn't really get those things in prior to launch because we were so busy with all the multi-platform stuff. Mm-hmm. And so now we get to finally like package up all these things in a really fun update and deliver them.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of other stuff that we're doing with this, but we're trying to kind of keep things fairly bottled up for this patch. Like we can kind of say what's out there, and if you're watching the patch notes and stuff, you can see it kind of trickling out.
But you can't see it.
You can't see it, and that's really.
Well, I think with Levelhead, because we did early access, we haven't really gotten the opportunity to just drop really awesome stuff. Right, in a surprising way, just unveil it to everybody, kind of at the same time. And we may still have a short beta prior to the full launch. Like I'm not sure, but our hope here is to be able to do like enough of our own internal testing and have all of our stuff working well enough that we can literally just deploy this thing, so that it just gets to be a surprise, you know?
Yeah.
The reality of game development is because we don't want to deploy bugs because it's very expensive to redeploy after a bug. Is we may have to reveal it for testing.
We'll do
purposes.
A beta
earlier, but
unfortunately,
yeah.
But of course, you can choose your own level of involvement here, right? Like, don't go into the beta channel if you don't want to see beta stuff.
Yeah,
well, that'll be the only place that it is.
The approach is going to be a little different, which is that instead of beta testing everything bit by bit, which is what we've done during early access, just builds every day, basically. This will be basically when the patch is done.
Yeah,
then we'll put it in there for people to see. So it will be a surprise. So all the people who are most hardcore about the game, I think, will be very, very excited to participate in the beta because it'll be this big pack of new stuff.
There's so much news. This honestly, this is our first what I would call our first big patch.
Yeah,
yeah,
right. Like all the previous Levelhead patches were typically revolved around like a couple of changes, like. Two new items here, or like rifts have colors now, plus a couple of interface updates. This is like a bucket of new fun toys.
There's 42 new avatars, and we're doubling the number of enemies. So like, what else to get over? You know,
so get over. Yeah, Sam the other day was like, I'm going to make so many new things for this patch that everybody can just shut up about.
Yep, that's my internal thing, you know.
Is literally not going to happen.
Nope.
Because one of the great things about having like a game that's out is you get to see this like what this side of human psychology, which it makes me laugh every time because it's 100% reliable.
Yeah.
Is the instant a person gets something. Their first response is, what about this other thing? which doesn't mean that they don't appreciate the thing that they got.
Yeah.
Of course they do. And the reason that they're thinking about the next thing is because they're excited about the thing that they just got. But it's always fun to see because like we also kind of use that as a barometer of like whether or not we're on the right track, you know? Like if we add something and that thing immediately generates like 30 new demands, then it's like, okay, cool. This is what people want, right?
If people are just silent about it.
That's a problem.
That's a problem.
Yeah. But yeah, if because what all it means is you're now like you're moving along on the hedonic treadmill, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's actually what's why the spike recoloring. It was originally just going to be spiketrons, and we thought about it for a couple minutes, and we're like, okay, because these are spikes, and there's other things with spikes. The only thing that's going to be asked is how come this isn't
all the other spikes.
All the other spikes. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, I'll just go do that.
So now instead, because it's on all the spikes, we'll be like, well, why isn't it on everything else?
It's like,
well, that's actually the first thing that happened is we do have folks in the Discord sort of like daily trolling through the patch notes trying to find new stuff, you know. And, you know, somebody grabbed a snip of that and dropped it in the Discord. And the immediate conversation, like starting on the next line after that got posted, was a conversation about why we don't have recolors for everything else also coming in. It's like, hey, we can only do so many things at once, you know? Maybe later, guys, but just you'll have to just take your spike recolors and enjoy them for now. But yeah, I mean I think there was a time in the past where I would find that frustrating. Mm-hmm. Like delivering content, and then of course the immediate conversation is about how like there should be more.
Well, I think, I mean, as an artist, I think in particular, they're doing this sort of work that we do, which is this creative work that other people judge and enjoy. There could definitely be a feeling of not having, not being enough or not having done enough that comes along with that, right? Because like if someone looks at your work and they're immediately like, how come it doesn't have this? You know, that's not great. To feel as a, depending on kind of where you're at in your
well, it's a perpetual feeling of under delivering.
Correct,
but it's also like one thing you have to recognize about humans is that they are absolutely insatiable.
Yes,
like that is a one.
It's a core feature of being a person.
It's a core feature of being a person is that you literally cannot be satisfied.
Mm-hmm. Just like those murders.
This is why you have to eat more than once. You know.
Yep. Yeah. It's actually happened the other day. So Diane and I have been making pizzas, and actually Diane has been making them because like she usually doesn't bake, but she we got some pizza dough from a neighbor down the block, and then we made a homemade pizza, and Diane was like, oh my God, I need this. And so what's happened is that because eating the pizza is so good, right? Just so good coming out of the oven. And like we load this thing up. So it weighs like 700 pounds. Like it is just a fortress. It's hardly a pizza at that point. It's like there's a cracker on the bottom of a pile of good stuff, right?
I mean, that's what pizza is supposed to be.
Right. And so what's happened now, though, is that because the pizza is so good, we'll eat it. We'll eat the whole thing, right? So each of us has half of a pizza, essentially. And we're both full, but you want to keep it going. You know what I mean? Like you want to keep the feeling going.
Because
so
one of the worst things about pizza is that there isn't more of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so
this is the only bad thing about pizza, actually.
Yeah, this is the thing. I totally get it now. I think if you're early on in your creative development, it can definitely feel like a slap in the face that whenever someone likes the thing that you made, that they always feel like there's not enough of it. But I think that's
good. Like the highest form of praise from a human, right? It's like
I want more.
This isn't enough.
Well, it's that their attention is that form of praise, right? Where if someone will take the time to look at the thing you did, interact with it, and have enough of an experience with it, then to come back and then find you and then say like, hey, I wish you did this also or this instead or whatever. That is like the deepest form of caring out there. And of course, it'd be nice if it only came in the form of, this is great, I love
caring
it.
Words.
That was it.
Yeah.
But
this is great and I'm 100% satisfied with exactly what I have.
But yeah, that's
no one ever.
Yeah, said no one ever. So it is one of those things that you have to kind of – It was actually funny, like leading up to the launch of Levelhead, we talked to the whole team because for most of the team, this was their first launch, you know, we're like, all right, you're going to see some negative stuff. We don't get to just launch this thing and walk away and be like, oh, cool. Like we launched something that everybody loves and that's it. Right. And we got everybody prepped, you know, for it. And then we did the launch and I was reading some of the reviews and stuff. And it was funny because like I was expecting to have to do some mental work to sort of dust off the negative effect of somebody being like a reviewer saying they didn't like the game for X, Y, and Z reasons and whatever. And I had none, but there was zero. Like I read these negative things and I was just like, oh, that's funny, you know, cause I would be amused at how wrong like the author of the post was, or I'd be amused at the logical leap, or I'd be amused that somebody would say like, everything is great except for this one thing that is really minor actually, but because of that 4 out of 5 stars when they really like otherwise would have given 5, but there was this one little thing, you know,
which implies
which apparently
like,
is the there's 20% always going to be of the experience.
Yeah, because, yeah. Right.
And it just so I could just be kind of amused at this stuff actually, but it's taken all 7 years or whatever of us doing this stuff to end up in that mental state.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because you also know like you did your best and the thing that you made is quite good for most of the people who engage with it, right?
Yep.
And like that's fine. And even looking at like, you know, think about in your own experience some of the TV shows or games that you absolutely love that you've like maybe like rewatched or replayed 3 or 4 times, right? Go look up reviews for those.
Oh, yeah, there's negative reviews all over the place.
Because there will be people who absolutely hate them, right? Mm-hmm. even though it may be like for you personally, it might be like a cornerstone of one of your hobbies, right?
Well, it's the same thing just even you as a person because we're here talking about this, you know, reading people disliking the things that we made, right? But we just like all kinds of stuff that other people made and like so that's fine, right?
It's just part of it. Not everything is for everyone and you know, I think the goal is to just – it's definitely a win if a huge majority – as in like 80 to 90% of the people who engage with the thing really, really like it.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Like that's great.
Well, I mean, it could even be a win if really a small fraction like it, you know, because it still means you found people who really like the thing you made. Right. And the unfortunate side of that is it can't feel nearly as good if 10% of your players fucking love the thing that you made. Right. And the other 90%.
And you're thinking, like, what happened with that other 90%?
Yeah, it was very yes. That's a hard sort of thing to then overcome, and you know, in some way. But there's no reason why. Like, it doesn't have to be bad that people don't like a thing, right?
No, it's just a fact.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be bad that most people dislike a thing because there are all kinds like there are infinite hobbies and interests out there that are only interesting to tiny minorities of people, mm-hmm. right? And everybody else around that sometimes are assholes and actively like hate it because they can, you know, but it doesn't make that thing actually not something worthwhile to the people who are into it. Right. So it's like, it just doesn't matter how many people hate it as long as there are people that like it. And it does matter from a business sense, definitely,
but from an emotional sense,
sure. Trying to get to that point where you can be really excited about the people who are into a thing. Because like the ability to create something that other people love is fucking amazing. You know, it's a really cool thing to be able to do and to be able to pull off. And the obsession of having to have 100% of the people love it is not healthy.
It's just
and
not
also
realistic.
Not possible, you know?
I mean, shit, you can have the perfect product and look at it on Amazon and it will have 4 out of 5 stars because somebody's box got dinged by UPS.
Yeah.
Right. Like you just can't win. It's fine. All right, now we were, I think, going to talk about Crashlands 2, but you know what? It's question time. So let's table the Crashlands 2 discussion for. I'm not even going to commit to next week because who the fuck
another
knows?
We'll table it for another time.
Another time. But just know that we are thinking about it and we're excited about it.
We're excited about it,
and that's all we're going to say.
We also are very uncertain about it.
Yep.
Just in the sense that we have a lot of questions.
Yes.
About what it's going to be, what it's going to be like. All right. So these questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. Our highest upvoted question comes from Butterscotch Atheist, who says, how does your build pipeline work? How does it handle multiple consoles where the game itself is fundamentally different? Please bless us with insights. Okay. So
this is not a short question. So how do we answer this shortly?
I'll just tackle this question about the idea of like the game being fundamentally different across multiple consoles.
Mm, right, because it's not.
So instead of getting into the technical details about like how the build pipeline happens, basically the thing you have to know about this is the concept of configuration management.
Yep.
Okay. So this is a concept where essentially we can flip the game into a different configuration. So it might be like in the Google Play configuration. It might be in the Nintendo Switch configuration or the Steam configuration. And our build pipeline will look at it will flip those configurations. So the build pipeline will say, I'm about to build for Nintendo Switch. I'm going to set the configuration to Nintendo Switch configuration. Mm-hmm. Then the game itself in the game's code will check what configuration it is in.
When and it matters.
And it will do different things. So if it says like, I'm on the Nintendo Switch configuration, so I'm going to use the Joy-Con like controller manager at this point in time, mm-hmm. as opposed to I'm on Steam, so I'm going to look for controllers this way, right? So it's really pretty simple, which is it's just changing the game between different configurations, which are like different versions of the game, and it just does different things.
Yeah, the hard part isn't the build. The hard part was coding up all of those things to work on the different platforms in the first place. Like that was where the trick came in. And then after that, it's just if-else statements. It's like, if you're on this platform, do this, otherwise do this other thing. And then having the build system just be aware of which of the states it's supposed to flip the game into.
Yeah. And so one of the traps that a lot of early developers will get into is not using configurations and instead putting themselves in a situation where they have to remember stuff. Right?
So they'll turn these things off, turn these on.
Yeah. They'll be like, ooh, I'm about to make an Android build. Let me go into my initializer object and change the variables that need to be changed in order for it to work on Android.
Yeah, don't be doing that.
Do not do that. Instead, you just set up a configuration and then the game will say, hey, since I'm on Android, here's the things I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, it's a pretty straightforward concept. And once you get it, it's becomes much easier to handle all these different platforms.
Yeah, I think you also could take it further because we also have a dev configuration that is set up to only talk to our development server and only to allow access by staff and to do extra logging and like to actually upload those logs somewhere and that kind of thing. Because
yep.
You don't want to do that normally, but you also don't want to have to remember, oh God, which thing am I on? Let me turn this one off here and on here or whatever, right? And so configuration management goes past making builds and actually becomes part of your development pipeline.
Yeah, and it makes it so easy. Once you get it. So definitely do that. And I don't know how a lot of other engines handle this, but in
Game Maker. They all have it. Everything has configuration.
They're all going to have it. In Game Maker, they have a section in the resource tree called configurations. You just right click it, you make a new one.
Boom.
And now you've got it. Piece of cake.
Ends up in a drop down list. So you just pick the one you want.
All right. Now, next question comes from Beaky Baba Boob. And this is going to get deeper than I think probably. He anticipated.
We'll just see about that.
His question is, how many typos do you each make per day?
So typos is then baked in or a typing mistake that may get resolved. Because when it comes to if we're talking keyboard accuracy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Many.
Yeah.
Because
I make a lot.
A lot.
The thing is, a lot of them. Because you hit so many damn keys, right? So even if you have 96% accuracy or something, sounds great. Sounds fantastic. But if you hit 100 keys every minute.
You fuck up once every 10 words, basically.
Yeah. every sentence is fucked up if you have 96% accuracy.
Yeah. Just kind of a lot, right? So, yeah, I think as far as typos, yeah, just constant typos. Mm-hmm. I think
it's a constant stream of typos.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's all I got, Seth. I don't know what deepness you're going for here. If it was deeper part of you type something you shouldn't have even typed. Is that where you're going?
No. Well, here's the thing. Accuracy is far more important than people realize when it comes to typing. So there's a website called Keybr, key.br, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Or is it Keybr.com? Keybr.com.
Keybr.com.
K-E-Y-B-R.com.
Yep. Yeah.
There's also a website that I use called Type Racer, where you can race a car against other people by typing a passage.
Maybe we should do a game jam with a type racing game.
We did make one once.
Oh yeah,
we made a typing game.
Man, that might have been before my time.
He had he just was windmilling his legs, and you would have him run.
It was
that was not before my time. Yeah,
it was to test out that animation engine.
Yeah, typing games are that was
typing games are fun to make, but. One thing that you will – so I'm on a quest to try to reach 150 words per minute typing. Currently, I'm averaging at 119 with 99% accuracy. Okay. But one of the things that I know is I'm using on TypeRacer, you can watch your typing speed over time as you go through a passage. And – my typing speed is actually close to 150 words per minute baseline. But when I – but with that 1% error rate, every time I make an error, my speed drops to 50, right? Like as I am backspacing and trying to get back to the right point to then figure out where I am and then retype. And so when it comes to going really fast, it's far more important to simply not make mistakes.
Yep. Yeah.
And if you're trying to learn how to type fast, don't focus on the speed. Just focus on the error rate. And this is where I think the deepness comes in, right? Because this is the philosophy of test-driven development. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the philosophy of DevOps. This is like the idea of
it's baking reduce errors first. Errors are extremely expensive.
Yes. Errors are so much more expensive than anybody could ever calculate. And they have so many invisible costs. And so the lesson from typing is the same lesson that comes into everything, which is you don't make typos. Do everything possible not to make typos. And then everything else will just fall into place. So that's what I have to say.
Poetic.
Very about nice. How many typos do you each make?
I do kind of really want to make a type racing game now for some reason. Just like
we could jam one out.
Yeah. Typing games are so fun.
In like a day.
We could do a web one.
There's like a bullet hell one. I think it's on Steam. It's like an exorcist sort of a pixel princess game. Yeah, it looks pretty incredible. So I was thinking about getting that. Maybe I'll crack it.
Yeah, it's probably a niche. Talking about niche games is probably right up there.
You know, it'd be dope.
Just as a fun thing to make. I think it'd be super fun.
It'd be really interesting if there's a typing game that's actually like a fully featured game, but you didn't have a mouse, okay? And so like if you wanted to click on a button, you actually had to type the words on the button. Like just the way that you navigated through the entire game was just typing all the things. Yeah. You're like, I want to quit, you know, or like you want to pause the game. Like you type the word pause because that's what you want to do.
And if you want to click something, you just actually type click on the thing, which is weird because you're just typing.
But you know, all those old text-based MMOs and stuff, like, I mean, those are typing games.
Yeah.
All right. Next question comes from Kip Nail Zongcloud, who says, Hey. This doesn't have to go on the show, but I was watching Seth's stream game, and his mouse to keyboard speeds are quite high. And I was just wondering what kind of mouse and keyboard he uses or you all use.
Mouse to keyboard, meaning like how fast you move back and forth between using a mouse and using a keyboard, or
I guess.
Probably.
He says, longtime Crashlands and Quadrupus player and podcast listener, first time stream watcher, and I'm excited about the stream game tutorial. I need my keys to go clickety clack, just like the B-Scotchers.
I think it comes from playing MMOs more so than it does from any specific, you know what I mean? Like that.
For Seth?
Just in general. Like the keyboard.
I don't play MMOs, so I don't know.
Yeah, the keyboard doesn't make you go faster. The mouse doesn't make you go faster. It's the constant training under duress that makes you go faster. Yeah. So there's a website called that I've been using for my art stuff, which is called I think it's mouse point accuracy or something like that. It's literally a clicking game. So they put up these little dots on screen, you click them, right? I've been doing it with my pen to get more comfortable moving across the whole big tablet screen. But it's one of those things like you could go do that every day just with a mouse. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be training for shooters, right? To get really good with clicking around. But it's also just good if you're using a computer a lot, which most of us are.
Yeah.
You could do that. Do you think it's the tech? No, it's not the tech.
It's not the tech in the sense that like you can use any old mouse or any old keyboard. And honestly, like as much as I love my mechanical keyboards, I will never go back because it feels better. It is not faster.
No.
It just isn't.
It sounds faster though.
It sounds faster. You know? And it feels better. And I think the fact that it feels better can make you end up faster because you're just enjoying the experience more and it feels a little less clunky. And
you use it more because you enjoy it more.
Yeah.
Which means it's just faster.
So it's not faster in the sense that like the keyboard isn't magically faster, right? It's just your experience with it is better. So you can end up being faster. I think my least favorite, and when it comes to speed, like we all just type a lot, like a fuckload, and we all care about it enough to have tried to get good at it. But I think also it's just from just sheer amount of doing it. We've all written huge swaths of text here and there, and you know we all program or whatever constantly. So there's just a lot of practice. But I will say the thing that I hate is mouse to keyboard movement.
Yep.
Hate it.
Yep.
The transition is
just because, and I think this is one of those things that if you're a lot slower at your keyboard and slower on your mouse, you wouldn't even notice. You wouldn't even notice this time loss, right? But when I'm trying to program and I just like need to get to another spot and I have to like take my hand off of the keyboard and grab the mouse and put it somewhere and then get back, I can feel just how severely interruptive that is to being able to actually do the work. And I hate it. And so my solution has been to use – so if anybody ever had a ThinkPad back in the day, ThinkPads used to be like the workhorse, awesome, standout laptop. And then for a while we're not. I don't know if they've gotten back into that or not. But that was what I ended up having. I think at like end of college or something, I had one of those. And it introduced this weird feature that I've only ever seen in ThinkPads, which is I just call it the nubbin. But it's that tiny little joystick basically that's in the middle of the keyboard. Right? Yeah, it's like smack in the middle. It's just a little dot, and it's grippy. So you just like put your pointer finger on it, and you can just like move it, and it works like a mouse. So getting used to that thing was very weird because it's a joystick, right? A tiny, tiny joystick. and then
you click with it.
So you don't click with it, but then there's like underneath the space bar is your click keys, right? So you basically use your thumb to click like the same way that you would use to hit the space bar. And so everything is this. So now your hands don't really move, right? Everything's in the same place. And despite the fact that those keyboards don't feel nearly as good as a mechanical keyboard, that was what I used at work. That was the keyboard I used. And I had to go like find one on Amazon. There was like one left that's just a keyboard by itself because it's not a normal thing you can just buy. And they're really hard to find actually. But it's amazing because you can still use a mouse without having to take your hand off. Mm. And that feels so much better than having even a nice mechanical keyboard and a separate mouse.
Yeah. Well, The thing
that I wish is actually what makes the mouse to keyboard movement more difficult than it needs to be is the fact that numpads are on the right side of the keyboard.
Actually, all my keyboards don't have numpads for this very reason.
Yeah,
it's like keep my mouse closer to the rest.
I love the numpad. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. It's fucking great. But why does everything have to be off to the right of the keyboard? The mouse is over there. The numpad is over there. Mm-hmm. You know, if the numpad was on the left side of the keyboard,
that would actually make more sense. That's a good point.
Yeah. Then you have a nice even space. Your keyboard be in the middle. You got things evenly spaced out. You're good.
So, it's easy to get keyboards without numpads though. So I just don't use the numpad.
Yeah, mine doesn't have a numpad on it.
Yeah, I don't bother. And I found that is actually the number one thing for increasing. If I'm going to have a keyboard that doesn't have a nubbin in the middle of it, then axing the numpad is by far the biggest boost to keyboard to mouse speed.
Yeah, what I just do is I load up all hotkeys onto my left hand. So it's just the left half of the keyboard, basically TGB and left is just like hotkey city.
Yeah, if you have to use a mouse a lot. Yeah, because like, that's the thing, like for Sam, like Sam's using a mouse all the time for his work, right? I only use a mouse when I have to navigate between things I'm working on, right? Mm-hmm. Which is very different. And so if you're in Sam's case, if you hotkey the fuck out of your left hand, then now you just get to never move. You're just already in the right position.
Yep.
In the case of programming or writing or something, learning hotkeys again is the same deal. Like just learn hotkeys that let you not have to use your mouse as much as possible. It's one of the things I keep on intending to do because it's a constant pain in the ass and annoyance that I have is the mouse switching, is figure out in VS Code, since where I spend all my time, is figure out how to really quickly navigate using the keyboard instead of using a mouse. But everything I've tried to do, it's still faster, as annoying as it is to use the mouse. So
yeah, I think it's one of my biggest beefs with a lot of with the entire Photoshop suite is the lack of rebindable most of everything.
Mm-hmm. It's probably one of the scenarios where because there are so many things.
Yeah, I think that the piece of software is so complicated that like I mean I get it, but at the same time I'm like this should
on the other hand
honestly should have been planned for. Like
on the other hand, VS Code, which is very complicated, has fully rebindable everything, and it's literally just a big ass JSON file, just fucking enormous. Yep. And every extension that gets added to it, because people can make their own extensions, can have its own hotkeys that are also in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they can all interfere with each other if they need to, because like that's your problem now. Like you go figure it out, right? So there is something to be said for still that. Allowing that despite the chaos, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
I also think I know this is like an MMO thing, but I absolutely love the mice that have 12 buttons on the side.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why this isn't a more commonly accepted or demanded thing outside of MMOs.
I mean, it's a waste of a hand, you know? Like, the mouse normally has basically scroll wheel, left click, right click, and then maybe middle click, right? Those are your things. Mm-hmm. That's three of your fingers, right?
Yeah, you got a thumb. You got a thumb.
You got a whole thumb.
Arguably the most important digit you got.
Yeah, just and chill. Like if you've played any video game ever, you know that the thumb is a very versatile tool, and it can hit a trillion different buttons very easily, right? Because mm-hmm. it's so dynamic. Yeah, it can get all over there. So,
I do actually when I play FPS, it's like when I was playing Control, I just rebound a whole bunch of the keys onto the basically I have a numpad on the side of my keyboard or the side of my mouse. I mean, so I just rebound it to the numpad over there. But I also find that. That stuff that's like towards them, because I think it's true. I think the mouse that I have, because it's got 12 keys on it, but they're all far enough back that the amount of like thumb bending I have to do to hit almost all of them is stupid.
I'd say definitely six of them are quite accessible, and six of them are definitely harder to get. Yep. But yeah, I mean it's weird that the tradition for a mouse is that it's basically this weird useless thing with like two buttons on it and a wheel. When you've got all these extra fingers,
has 100 keys on it. Yeah, right. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So my mouse has a wheel. It's got two buttons behind the wheel. It's got a third button on your ring finger, so it actually has three buttons, and then it's got 12 buttons on the side for the thumb. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, if you're say like doing art or something, and you're using your mouse a lot, and you're like, oh, I don't want to have to like bounce between the mouse and the keyboard or whatever. It's like, man, just. Get yourself – I think the mouse I have is like a Logitech G900 or something. Mm-hmm. I think it's like $60.
And there are cheaper ones too.
There are cheaper ones with the same number of buttons. But it is definitely not going to cost you like an arm and a leg to get a mouse with a shitload of buttons on it, you know. Mm-hmm. And you can just go to town on that thing. It's a game changer.
Yeah, the weirdest thing is that you're transitioning more so into doing art – the normal way, which is to say with a pen, with a stylus. I do think it's odd that the stylus has a button on it. And also the way it's designed, like I feel like you could take advantage of the fact that like it should be a mouse. Like it's essentially a mouse, right? But it's designed to hold exactly like a pencil. And so as a result, of course, you have almost no area to like put other stuff on it. But I could totally see like more of a chunkier sort of a boy that you're using in your hand, like more like a wedge.
Chunky boy.
That actually has buttons on it, because like there's just one damn button on this thing, and clicking it is almost impossible because of the shape of the thing. So you're drawing and stuff, and then like you just click this little tiny, I'm showing Adam Seth, there's a little tiny button here, and like it doesn't, my hand's not even on that thing most of the time because the whole thing is perfectly cylindrical. So I'll just pick it up, and then the button's over there, right? It's like if you picked up your mouse backwards half the time. That'd be weird.
It's like a USB drive. Right? You don't know which way it's.
Yeah, it's always oriented, a super position. Right? I can never use it, right? And so I'm like, hey, I wonder if there's like a better way.
Significant design flaw.
Yeah, there must be. I had a dream the other day that I was trying to explain to someone what a pencil was. I don't know why.
What was the hard part about explaining it?
Well. What was weird about it was, like, for starters, it was just that the person didn't know what it was, which implied a lot, so much missing context, right? Mm-hmm. Of what a pencil is and why you would need it.
Let's do it. So if you could just briefly describe to me what a pencil is, because I think I got a short one that would work.
So if you want to go with like a functional description, mm-hmm. you can just be like, well, it's a basic. Writing instrument for putting marks on a piece of paper.
And then I'd be like, what's paper? I've never...
What's paper? Because if somebody doesn't know what the fuck a pencil is, there's a pretty good chance that they also don't know what paper is.
I would just say that it's a bonus finger that marks things. That's it.
Bonus finger.
Mm-hmm. But only when it's pointy, you know? As mm-hmm. you mark things with it, it becomes less pointy, and then you've got to put it into a grinder to get it back to a point.
Yep.
You know,
in that sense, it's basically a knife that leaves material instead of cutting material.
Ooh, yeah. It's a reverse knife.
It's a reverse knife.
Not a reverse knife, because that would hurt if you grabbed it.
Yeah, the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, you can only grab a reverse knife the wrong way. because it's
reversible. Yeah, but I mean, but actually,
you
but
know, if you have a reverse knife, just grab it from the other side. Problem solved.
But it's kind of an interesting question there, which is like there's going to be a point in time, quite far off, but there will be one where people see a pencil and they're like, "What the fuck is that thing?"
I don't know. Much I don't like, think so. I mean, it's like it's a universal implement, you know? Because like as long as we have hands, we're going to have pencils,
and as long as we need to make marks on things, which
is going
to
be all the time. Because people love
marks. We may not have pencils exactly, you know, but we're still going to have chalk or something because we still have to like build things and, you know, mark stuff where we're building things and whatever.
Always marking things.
Yeah.
No, well, wait, man. Think about it.
For that.
Think about it. You go to space, you know, every little piece of resource matters. You can't have a writing implement that creates shavings and constantly gets smaller over time.
Isn't that where ballpoint pens came from? It's like ballpoint pen, right?
Yeah, but you got to keep refilling the ink, which means you got to launch ink up into space. You know, if instead you've got a touch screen with a stylus, you can make infinite markings.
Except now you
got
to launch touch screens up into space.
So. Yeah, we're gonna get those. Yeah. What about the resources?
Yeah, but that's no heavier than a notebook, right?
Yeah.
So you got infinite paper. But I think infinite
even ink. In that case, you still got a pencil. It just doesn't put marks down itself. It interacts with the screen to put a mark down on the screen.
So it's I think metaphorically, it's so easy to figure out.
Anyways, glad we solved that. That's good.
Yeah.
So
good. Nice work. Nice work.
Now you know. Anyway, I think that's all the time we have for this week.
Yeah, it's good.
So it's a good spot to end that on. We'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Coster, for putting the podcast together. And thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, go to podcast.bscotch.net, where we have links to the Discord, a way for you to donate, and links to the podcast archives. Thank you all for listening. See you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.